On America Can We Talk, I talk about election integrity, border security, healthcare freedom, race relations, energy and tax policy, education policy, free speech and assembly, freedom of religion, and all other issues that touch on the God-given right of every American to life, liberty, and the pursuit of their version of happiness. Stay tuned.
Your tolerance, but lecture me. Is there no end to your own hypocrisy? Your God is power, you have no shame. Your only interest is political gain. You hide your eyes and refuse to listen. You play your game.
Coming up next, America Can We Talk with your host, Debbie Georgiatos.
And hello and welcome to America Can We Talk. I'm Debbie Georgiatos. Today we're going to talk about Easter at the White House, banning religious symbols while celebrating transgenderism. An author in studio with us, Bunny Pounds, she joins me. She's the author of Jesus and Politics. It's a longer title. You'll see here in just one moment. Also talk about lawless America, storming the border fences, plus squatting is stealing. Supreme Court, amazing news. The Arizona election machines case is before the Supreme Court. Amazing development there I want to hit. And when we will hopefully get to the last topic, young black voters for Trump. It's even making James Carville nervous. And of course, I'll tell you why these stories matter to you. My first five today, because we do have a guest in studio, but I want to hit on what happened on Easter. First, I hope you all had a lovely and blessed Easter weekend and a lovely resurrection celebration on Sunday. So at the White House, two things happened, and it's really important, I think, to address how the media responded to it. But the short story is, there is every year, there's an Easter egg hunt or Easter egg roll at the White House lawn, and instructions came out saying that the decorated Easter eggs that children were bringing, and they bring them because they want to see them celebrated and even displayed at the White House, could not include religious symbols. You have other things, but not religious symbols, which is kind of interesting. And the second point was, it turned out of all the possible days that could have been done, there was an order signed by President Biden designating, it happened to fall March 31st, same date as Easter, the National Day of Transgender, whatever it was called, doesn't really matter, transgender visibility. I keep losing that term, Transgender Day of Visibility. So people are saying, hey, wait, this is Easter. The entire purpose of Easter, obviously, is to celebrate the resurrection. And for Christians, it is the most important Christian holiday of the year. And the Easter egg roll is kind of a fun way to celebrate. But these two incidents taken together by the Biden administration, this, you know, no religious symbols thing, as well as the Transgender Day of Visibility, being a big, just a scream out about celebrating transgenderism. So a lot of people commented, and very shortly after that, several media sources came out to just leap to the defense of the Biden administration and say, well, you know, on the one hand, it turns out this Easter egg roll is actually sponsored by some organization, who ever heard of them, which are actually called the American Egg Board. If you ever didn't know, there is such a thing, the American Egg Board. They claim that they've been sponsoring this at the White House since time began, in the 70s or something, and that the rule has always been there, that you can't have religious symbols on the eggs the kids decorate and bring to the White House. So they're just saying, this is just kind of a big, you know, people making, right-wingists, especially right-wing people making, just getting hysterical, conspiracy theorists, exaggerating. Well, the fact is, I don't think anyone, so far as I recall, certainly not when Trump was president, you didn't see the White House putting it out as a formal announcement. Remember, no religious symbols. It was very much of a confrontational way to go about it. The rule's been there, no one even knew it was there. The only reason we know it now is because the Biden administration went so far out of their way to make it a public statement. But the media is leaping to the Biden team's defense and saying, my gosh, these hysterical Republicans, out of line. The fact they're not out of line. And then when you compound it with the National Transgender Day of Visibility, you know, that was another kind of, oh my gosh, why would you, of all days of the year, in fact, because this is leap year, there were actually 365 other days they could have done that, but that was a day. Again, media jumps to the defense of the Biden administration to point out that there was actually a Transgender Day of Visibility announcement or holiday created by a private citizen years ago, not even years ago, 10 years ago, a private citizen, just someone who advocates for transgenderism, who, whatever reason, strongly believes in it. So this was just a private citizen creating this, the first administration to actually put out and celebrate this Transgender Day of Visibility. Was not the Trump administration. It was a Biden administration. First time, 2021, Biden's in office, and he makes what is some private person's concoction of a celebration of transgenderism into a national proclamation. And I'm getting to the point of, I could talk a lot more about it, but I want to wrap up the first five and turn to our guest. But I do want to make a couple of quick points. Number one, in America, which actually was founded on Judeo-Christian values rooted in the Bible's description of what man's rights are from God, is in the Declaration for a reason. It was a premise of the thinking of the founders who wrote the Constitution, that America was created to honor the rights of, honor the ideas of the Bible, including the most, among the most precious ones, the Declaration. You know, we're all created by God, we're all equal, and we have inalienable rights just because we were born to life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. That Judeo-Christian founding includes actually complete freedom of religion. That's what America was founded on. We have freedom of religion, but the fact that we guarantee freedom of religion does not mean that we are trying to, as the left is trying to do, push Christianity out of the American square, out of the public square, which is what the left is doing. Second point, the Biden administration, the choice for them to put into place on Easter, on March 31st, 2024, a very frontal assault on egg decorating, don't you dare put a religious symbol, compounding that with Transgender Day of Visibility, was a 1-2 punch, again telling America, we the left do not honor Christianity, we don't want it spread, and we certainly don't want it viewed as something that we widely as a culture accept. Now, the Transgender Day of Visibility did happen to be designated by, as March 31st by this person who thought it up years ago. However, if you had people working in the White House who actually understand America's heritage, who actually support America's heritage, they could have put together those facts saying, you know what, we're pushing this thing, no religious symbols on eggs, and we're pushing out an advocacy for transgenderism on Easter. That might be taken the wrong way. That might be viewed as offensive. That might be viewed as actually confrontational, which in my view, it was. It was not a, this was a decision by the White House. We're fine sending out a message that we're really, really antagonistic to Christianity. We don't want to see your silly symbols anywhere on the White House grounds. And the same day, we're going to celebrate transgenderism. They could have picked one other day of the whole year, not Easter, but they didn't, which ties into my last point. Right when the Biden administration, he who occupies the White House, took over in January 2021, they went out of their way to talk about how they were celebrating and making very, very strident efforts to hire people with a broad, their term, diversity. What they really meant is every single non-binary, all 53 genders or however many they claim there are now, it was a mission of this administration to hire people who identify, whose life purpose is to identify around their sexuality, which is so far afield from what a White House staff should be, so far afield from what America was intended to be. Christians, conservatives, they were right to speak up about the Biden administration, how they chose to honor Easter in 2024. And that, my very fine friends, is today's first five. So we have in studio a friend of mine who's also an author, and she's also founded an amazing organization called Christians Engaged. And actually, I remember before this existed, I remember talking to her about this idea of this organization, Christians Engaged, but she's also the author, I'm going to steal that book, also the author of this book, which I do have at home, but I couldn't find, so I asked her to bring it. It's called Jesus in Politics, One Woman's Walk with God in a Mudslinging Profession. So my friend Bunny Pounds, the author of this book, she actually used to be a political consultant for many candidates. In fact, she'd been in our home as we're hosting events for candidates that she was helping run for office. So I've known her for years, and she really was a wonderful and ethical and hardworking political activist. But then she decided she kind of branched out, maybe branched up into creating Christians Engaged. So she has this new book out. We're going to talk about her book and also her organization. And welcome to the show, Bunny Pounds.
Thank you, Debbie. It's so great to be with you.
Great to have you here. And I know you have been working. We were talking before we got on air today about how busy life is, how you used to think you were busy 20 or 30 years ago. And all that happens is life gets busier and busier. So I know you're busy with all this.
We have important work to do to make sure liberty is protected and that Christians are awake, fully awake right now. And what you said in your opening monologue is true. We've got an assault on Christianity that we need to consider. And if Christians are not awake right now, what will it take to wake up?
That's a very good question. What will it take? Actually, let's talk about Christians Engage first and then your book.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So Christians Engage, I know you do a lot of, you just tell us, because you've done it before on the show, but go ahead and tell our listeners what your organization is all about.
Yeah, well, we're a 501c3 nonpartisan nonprofit. We teach Christians about prayer, voting, and engagement. We built actually a voter mobilization communication system for believers from a nonpartisan perspective, in that people can take our pledge to pray, vote, and engage at christiansengage.org. Take the pledge and you will get prayer reminders every Monday. You'll get voting reminders, text and email, four texts and email around every election in the country. And then we are also, Debbie, becoming quite famous on our video curriculum, yeah, teaching Christians about civics, how to engage with local government, federal government, state government, and now also getting into Bible studies on economics, justice, real big biblical worldview topics.
I love that. I love everything. But that last part about getting into Bible studies, because for the longest time, as we've talked about in the past, there's been this kind of sense of there's church and that's Sunday,
yeah,
and or at home, and then there's life. But that wasn't always true in America. It wasn't how pastors back at the time of our founding taught. But you've been trying to, you're in this Bible study portion, especially, you're reminding people the Bible teaches a mountain of things that applies to today's policy. So quickly, so you mentioned a few of them.
Yeah.
Biblical things on economics.
Justice, economics. We have a biblical worldview class coming out on the big questions of how did we get created? What is God? All of that's happening in June. We're putting out a campaign school on Thursday, a full campaign school with our friend Eamon Ross, who's developed a campaign school to help Christians run for office. We've got a lot of really inexpensive curriculum projects for Christians to go through and really educate them on the issues.
Okay, so just take the candidate part. Mm-hmm. Does a candidate come to you to learn how to talk about the issues, or to learn they have some basis for their conservative views in the Bible? What is it you're teaching them?
Well, we're trying to get Christians that know nothing to start engaging.
Might be a lot of those. I don't know.
So our step one for Christians Engage is to take our pledge to pray, vote, and engage. If every Christian would start praying every week for our nation, voting in every election, we're already a step higher than we were. And then our step two is on-ramp to civic engagement. That teaches Christians about political parties, what is a platform, how to advocate, how to get to know your elected officials, you know, issues from a biblical perspective, how to walk with Jesus in politics, because we have to watch our hearts and our souls, Debbie, as we're engaging. And then after that, we try to help mentor Christians. You know, do you want to run for office? Do you want to kind of walk beside an elected official? Do you want to advocate for a certain interest group or a topic? What is your burden of your heart for the country, and help steer them into education that will help them fulfill the call of God on their lives?
Okay, so say someone said, you know, my strongest thing is I want to support life. I want to fight for a pro-life culture. Do you send them to other organizations?
We do, yeah.
I was going to say, I've noticed this in the last, I don't know how many years, more and more organizations are being created. They're kind of proliferating.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a good thing. I know that some people say, we don't need this kind of organization. Actually, we need a lot of them. We need a lot of organizations, and they may have a slightly different, you know, mission or a slightly different way they approach it. But at the end of the day, if people are getting involved because some organization help them feel like they were part of the system.
Exactly.
Then they feel like, oh, I can do something.
Well, the elites believe that they are in charge, and whether it's academia or the Beltway of Washington, D.C., they think they're in charge. But when we join together as individuals in interest groups and advocate for what we believe, we have a lot more power than we think. And I actually believe that it's we the people that are in charge. So we steer people, if their life issue is their main issue, we steer them to our friends at Susan B. Anthony or Human Coalition, and we train them if they want to run for office, how to talk to the media and go through our campaign school. So we have a lot of things that we can push them to. But
How big is Christians Engage now?
Well, we have over 200,000 Christians now in our system praying, voting, and engaging. We've had over 2,000 Christians go through one of our long-form 6 to 8 hour courses now, and we're scaling. Lord willing, we want to scale to 1 million Christians this year before the presidential election. I think we can get there, and we want to double double amount of Christians in our classes as well.
Wow. Okay. So your mission is to get these people, you're not just directing them, say this, do this, but find where their heart, where God's leading their heart, send them on the path.
Yeah.
Okay. But you also, you get inside some churches and you get churches to allow you to come to present. So how do you get those people to do that?
Yeah. We've been in over 125 churches and we have strategic ministry partnership agreements with over 60 churches. And we help them do voter registration, voter mobilization with our pledge, and then we give them all the curriculum to use within their church culture. So it's a real great program. We love walking with local churches. I've been booked in every Sunday morning since the beginning of this year in a church. And my vice president, Ben Quine, loves to go to Baptist Bible churches. So we just all split up, and Rafael Cruz, you know Rafael very well. He goes into churches for us and others. So it's exciting.
And I saw you just got Michelle Bachmann to join your board.
Yeah,
right?
Michelle's on our national advisory board, and also former Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler from Missouri just joined our advisory board.
Okay, I don't know her, but I just saw Michelle Bachmann at this function. I love her.
Yeah.
I mean, she's an amazing powerhouse.
Yeah, Michelle did the afterword for my book as well. I was really blessed. James Robison, who you know from Life Outreach International, did my foreword, and Michelle did my afterword. So she's really believing in Christians Engaged, and I'm very thankful for her support.
So you know what, I hope that we have our Mr. Amelia, we have our Chiron. Do we have Christians Engaged? If you should put it up. Thank you very much. Okay, the book, and then we need to add Christians Engaged. Is it .org?
.org.
Christiansengaged.org. Can you add that? Thank you so much. Okay, I forgot to send that. Okay. Now about your book, you know, was it Christmas time I was talking to you and you said I won't be able to go some things, I have to finish this. Wasn't that right?
Well, yeah, I was working on pre-sales, so we had a lot, you know, I never knew how hard publishing was till you get into it. And then you have a publisher, Charisma took my, Charisma and Frontline Books did my book. But yeah, we had to build in a whole bunch of pre-orders, so we were doing a lot of pre-meet and greets and trying to get people to pre-order on Amazon. It came out February 6th, and it hit number one in two categories in new releases. We were on the 700 Club, Life Today, Steve Deese's show, and others. So it's really gone well. It's already in second printing, so I'm very excited about that.
And this book is kind of your personal journey, going through politics, going through what you did in politics, helping all these really wonderful candidates. You always had wonderful candidates. But it was talking about how you were led. I shouldn't put words in your mouth. What is this all about?
Yeah, well, my heart with the book was to give people a testimony. I want young Christian people to understand they can go into politics and government as a mission field. We really need Christians to have a grid. Okay, I can walk into these spaces and I can still be real Christ followers. I can love Jesus. And my testimony is for 16 years, I was a political consultant and an activist in politics, and I still love God. That's a good thing. And I protected my heart. So I want to help Christians get a grid for that, understand that every Christian needs to pray, vote, and engage. And I do that through stories from my life. Debbie, I didn't think I had a lot of stories to tell till I sat down and wrote it. And then I also want to kind of be like a pastor in the fact that I want to pastor the political movements, Christians that are involved. There's a lot of places that we can get overrun with offenses, bitterness, unforgiveness, pride, anger, fear, these things that come into our life and try to take us out as Christians or turn us into people that, you know, our fellow church members really don't want to associate with. And so I want to help Christians. You're getting involved for America to protect liberty, but in that process, please stay in the place of prayer, stay in the Word of God, let God deal with your heart. And a lot of my story is being very vulnerable in places of brokenness and failure and things that happened in my life and other friends' lives that were members of Congress and other places that, you know, we needed God and we had to seek God in those moments.
I love that. I was thinking of the one story that is too long to tell, I know, but I heard you speak at some club around here. Was it in one of the Republican women's clubs? And you spoke. And at the end, I was thinking that I went home and told my husband the whole long story. And it was basically about the idea, though, that you do encounter things in politics where things aren't fair. I mean, people really do mislead the public about you, tell stories, or, well, you know, she's not really, whatever they try to say. And the temptation is to, wow, I'm going to retaliate. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. But you actually find, I mean, I won't tell the whole story again, but you really made it relevant to people involved in politics, relevant, your testimonies, your stories, they're relevant to people who are immersed and really active in politics.
Yeah, and what you're referencing is I ran over $1 million race for Congress in 2018 and only lost by 2,700 votes out of 43,000 votes. It's really close. And my former opponent, his consultants had floated all of his invoices for the runoff. So he didn't pay for his mail, his TV, his radio. It's a legal practice, Debbie. I wish it wasn't, but the injustice of that, of me outraising him by $300,000 and then him being floated to victory in essence, really, really impacted my heart. And a year later, the Lord told me the only way I was going to get over this was to help him pay off the rest of his debt from that runoff. And so we hosted a whole fundraiser for him. And I went to all my donors who hadn't given him money and helped pay off that debt. And the beauty of that night, I'll never forget it. It was December 2019, right before we started Christians Engaged a week later. Was I left that season of brokenness with all the offenses and bitterness laid down at the feet of Jesus. And Congressman Lance Good and I are really dear friends. And testimony is he's the first member of Congress to read the book, sign off on the book. And the man who funded the super PAC against me, $500,000, has also just gave Christians Engaged money to help the ministry. So God can bring restoration in so many ways.
It is an amazing story, and honestly, kind of a rare story in politics, a rare story that someone who not just happened to beat you, but you realize it wasn't really fair how the money worked here, but that decision to, I'm going to help him, I mean, and he probably fell off his chair when you called him, first of all, but second of all, the idea that it not only it helped him move forward without debt, which is a wonderful thing, but really, and I can't remember the detail, but something about when you formed Christians Engaged or when you launched it a week later or so, a lot of things fell in place because you had gone through this. I'm just not going to say in my heart, okay, fine, I forgive you, but you acted on it. You did something.
Well, we've had people that have come and supported the ministry. Even, again, the man who funded the super PAC against me recently just came and said, I want to help Christians Engage. And he did that because he was influenced by the book and my story. But at the end of the day, people want to see real Christ followers. They want to see they want to see people live this out. And, you know, it's really been an honor to see God move through individual Christians' lives and really impact the culture.
Yes, it is. I'm sending a message to my producer. Okay. Anyway. It is a wonderful thing. I mean, and actually, it is blessed everyone. And he's been a great member of Congress, too. Okay. So I want to ask one more thing about this book. So first of all, you can get it on Amazon.
Yeah. Amazon, ChristianBook.com, Barnes & Noble. Help me. First year of book sales is really important. So Jesus in Politics. Yay.
But also, so people will order it. I really hope they will, and I believe they will, and we have. So what is your, if you had one message to say to people, and maybe you've already said that, I don't mean to put you on the spot because you've been very expressive, but one message to take away from the book, what is it?
Well, I want to teach people how to be bold and courageous to stand up for the issues of the day, but also I believe we can walk in the Sermon on the Mount and walk like Jesus. And the left will tell you that's impossible, but I believe it is possible for us to balance those two things. So again, I hope that the book and the audio book, I know young people don't read books anymore, so I did the audio book, read it myself for them, but will inspire a next generation of Christians to start praying, voting, and engaging, see themselves in political careers, and also for those of us that are involved, it's such a journey and an adventure to walk with Jesus every day. And we can see miracles and signs and wonders even in the lives of elected officials that we get to walk with in this space.
Yes, we can. I wasn't going to ask you this, but you know, I was just thinking while you were talking. So on Easter in the evening, our one son who lives around here was over, and we decided to watch. We had not seen The Chosen, whatever the newest one was.
Yeah.
In any case, the episode we watched was when Jesus is he's portrayed as giving the Sermon on the Mount, which I guess historically wasn't one big sermon. It was actually several, but whatever. Giving the Sermon on the Mount. And first of all, it was really well. Have you seen this?
Yes.
Okay. Really well acted. And I was just struck by, because it was so earnest in his presentation, that I would start doing the pondering, well, gee, you know, what he's just saying about the different lessons he had, it made the listener go, am I really fully embracing that? Am I doing that? Could I do that a little better?
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was amazing how profoundly he delivered that and what made the people think. And then the scene later when... Okay, who is it goes back? Matthew goes back to his parents.
Yes.
I didn't even tell you I was going to talk about this. I just thought about what you're talking about. Matthew goes back to his parents who've suffered because he became a tax collector, so he's viewed as the enemy, and his parents, they lost their friends, lost their family, no one's speaking to them, and they were mad at him, and they had this beautiful scene of just all saying, you know, Jesus is teaching you have to, and the parents had actually, or at least the mom, had listened to him deliver the Sermon on the Mount.
Yes.
Very profound, like real application of what I just heard in the Sermon on the Mount. I thought it was really profound.
Well, and if I can say this, Debbie, to close out, you know, my favorite scripture in that is, those that are poor in spirit will see God.
Yeah.
And I think what we've abandoned in the modern American church is we've forgotten that we need the Word of God every day. We need Jesus every day. We need His presence every day. We think we can survive on our own gifts and talents and our own abilities. And that's part of my story is here I was a powerful campaign manager, a powerful consultant, and you know all these influential people. But at the end of the day, you get to the point where if you don't have God's wisdom in your life, if you don't have His strength in your life, you're not going to move anything. Nothing's going to happen. And so I want to call people that are involved in politics. Yes, we have to get involved. Yes, we have to fight for liberty. Yes, we have to be courageous on our issues. But at the end of the day, we have to need Him and we have to go to Him, because ultimately the only thing that's going to save America is Jesus and the power of the gospel and the resurrection that we just celebrated this last weekend.
Bunny Pounds, that was awesome. Again, I want to show our listeners, if you can just, the book is Jesus and Politics by Bunny Pounds. I see Afterward by Michelle Bachman, love her. And then the subtitle, One Woman's Walk with God in a Mudslinging Profession. And that is what it is. So this is what the book looks like. It's very cool. And I heard her deliver, I guess we did the pre-order. That was why I signed the pre-order. The book is out there. And it really is, you talk about a time when America is just so politically divided, a lot of anger and a lot of misrepresentations made about people. And this notion of just elevating our political involvement to really not just try to be a nicer person, but actually follow what we've been taught in the Bible and actually live it. Bunny Pounds, thank you for coming in.
Oh, thank you so much, Debbie. Really appreciate your friendship and all your work.
Right back at you, as they say. Okay, folks, so I want to try to hit three topics. And if we can, if we don't get to the last one, it will have to be next time. But I want to hit, I call this, I'm kind of combining two things happening in America, but called it Lawless America, Storming Border Fences Plus Squatting is Stealing. And I sent the wonder Mr. Emilio, my producer, I sent him a clip. This happened at the border in Texas, I think 2 weeks ago. And it's a video someone happened to capture of illegal immigrants literally overpowering a fence, overpowering border officials, and storming into America. I want to quick play that and play a few comments for you about that. Okay, many of you have seen that video. But I want to make a couple points about it in the larger picture of America. You know, Charlie Kirk, the incredibly brilliant young man who founded Turning Point USA, said basically the fight for America is over faith, family, and property. And often you don't hear property in that lineup, and I do believe property really matters. But I want to make that several points just about what you saw at that border scene. Obviously, these are people who have, over time, come to believe that they have a right to come here. They're not sneaking in and kind of feeling guilty and hoping maybe the Border Patrol doesn't see them. They are storming the fence. They are storming the American border with a sense of anger and entitlement and overpowering the border officials. And it gets at the point, one of the many points I want to make on this story, which is there has been a spread of the concept by the anti-American left that lawlessness is fine. Laws are, you know, they're there to be ignored, broken if you wish, and they certainly don't restrain your behavior. They shouldn't restrain anything you do. If your mission is, I care about me, I want to be in America, they don't care what the law is. They don't care why the border officials are there. They don't mind people getting injured as they are storming the border. And I'm getting at the point, this is an outgrowth of the intention of the left to, number one, instill a sense in people, you're just entitled to come to America. If you want to, you're entitled, you come. And that people who complain about that, who say we ought to have a border, are haters or somehow, you know, unfit. They're just bad, bad people because they're not kind enough. They're not willing to allow people to enter our country when they don't have any right to be here. The whole conversation about American sovereignty and the meaning, the existence of a border has been flipped by the left over the last, really since the beginning of the first Obama administration, to instead of the notion which existed for over 200 years, we have the right in this country to actually have a border and to enforce it as every other country does. We have the right to do that too. Instead of that being what we think, we now have people who actually think and act as though they're entitled, and a whole class of people in this country who equally think, well, of course they need to come here. Who cares about the ideas of sovereignty and citizenship and the rule of law and nonviolence? This is leftism creating chaos in our country. This is the Cloward Piven mindset that says we create enough chaos in America, we're going to have just tumult in the streets, and eventually the people will demand government crackdown, which is what is coming. But back what happened at the border, bad enough that America saw that. You didn't hear one comment out of the Biden administration saying, my gosh, that's terrible, we better fix that border fence. No one said, isn't that awful? Why do these people feel entitled to come here? You didn't see Mayorkas, who's supposed to be in charge of Homeland Security, saying, well, that's outrageous. Obviously, we have a problem. No problem. No problem to them. They didn't mind it. This would never have happened. Sometimes I feel we've been desensitized to this border issue to the point that when people are overpowering the border fence, overpowering the agents, people watch it. You probably watched that video 2 weeks ago and say, okay, yeah, but you know, that was then, move on. You know, is it going to rain tomorrow or not? You're back into the next thing in life, not realizing you just saw the overrunning of America's border. And that's just one tiny piece of the border problem. You see no complaints, nothing out of the administration in Washington that allegedly has a responsibility to enforce the border. Compound that with, you would think at least, as those people who overran the border, we just saw overran the border fence violently, you would think, well, at least they probably got arrested. And many of them did. Many of them did. And so you think, well, okay, well, at least they're going to be sent back because, you know, they came to America illegally. No, that's not what happened. An El Paso judge just released the group of migrants who on March 21st ripped away the razor wire fence to storm the U.S. border. Literally, a judge, the magistrate judge in El Paso, Texas, ordered the release of migrants who were charged with rioting after a large group of them stormed the border, tearing down the razor wire. Presiding Magistrate Judge Humberto Acosta delivered the ruling after accusing the El Paso District Attorney Office of failing to prepare properly. That was his complaint. The people in America, they should have prepared for this overrunning of the border, complaining about Americans who are trying to enforce the law, not about the conduct of the migrants, and he released them. I'm sure they have a trial date. You know, they're released. They're all released on their own recognizance, and everyone knows they'll never show up again at one hearing ever. But this conduct by this judge, it actually enhances, it legitimizes what those people did. It sends the message to every illegal immigrant planning to come to America, go ahead and be violent. Go ahead and overrun the border. Go ahead and knock down the Border Patrol people. Nothing will happen to you. They'll confine you. You'll get, you know, a warm bed and food and everything you need, while a few days later, the judge will come along and release you. This is the message America's sending to the world. We're a lawless country. We never protect ourselves. We don't protect our citizens. We don't demand following the law. You overwhelm us and you come on in, and we're just going to find a way to not only make it so that you don't get in trouble, but that, you know, you have some hearing date in the future, which everyone knows will never show up. It's a similar thing in this particular, this segment of the show about lawless America. Same thing with squatting. And if you don't know what that is, there's actually a legal term which isn't the same as squatting, but I want to talk about what's been happening in America. So squatters means people who realize a particular residence is uninhabited. And so they have, these are people who are homeless. There are many illegal immigrants who came to America illegally, who are never going to leave unless they're forced. And they are taking over private homes. Literally, and Florida had a big problem with this, because many homes in Florida are owned by people, their second homes, owned by people who live up in the north where, you know, it's cold in the winter. So these people living in New York, other states, they have a Florida residence. They come down to Florida when it's snowy and cold in the New England or wherever they're from, and they enjoy the winter season down in Florida where the weather's more mild. And then as summer starts to heat up and they don't like the Florida heat, they go back up to New York or wherever they're from to live in those climates. These people have two homes, but they own the home in Florida. It's their home. What had been happening in Florida and around the country is squatters, illegal immigrants, make their way into the homes and just take up residence. I mean, literally, in one case, sold all the furniture that belonged to the person who owned the home, take over the home, they live there, and then when the homeowners come back and say, you know, you're in my house, the squatters say, we're not leaving. And the most astonishing thing, talking about a nation becoming lawless, is that the courts end up requiring the homeowners to go through a lengthy, sometimes 6 months, sometimes years, sometimes more, process to get people out of their own homes. It's like if you went home today after work and you realize someone else is living in your house and you try to say, hey, get out of our house, the police were honoring squatters' rights. That's what they're calling it now, the cute term, squatters' rights. They're saying, well, they're there, so you, the owner, who actually earned the money and got the mortgage and pay the mortgage every month and own the home and do the upkeep in the home, you have to pay money to go to court to get a judge to finally order people who have no legal right to be in your home to get out. Fortunately, in Florida, and I will give Governor DeSantis huge kudos for this, Governor DeSantis just signed a law basically just saying, we're not doing this anymore. These people are out. And so literally, these people are out means that they now in Florida, you come back to your home, you realize squatters have taken over. They often, by the way, the squatters change the locks, so you, the homeowner, can't get into your own home with your own key because they change the locks. So this now is almost immediate process in Florida. You call the sheriff, you show him you own the property, sheriff rounds him up and boots him out. I have dozens of stories I was going to try to get to on this, but this is not just an isolated incident or isolated circumstance in Florida. It's happening around the country. People who rent out their home on an Airbnb, and the person who rents a home, Airbnb, moves in, changes the lock, sometimes sells furniture, steals their car, and they have to go to court and fight to get the renter out of their own property. And this, the larger point of this, why I tied it to the border security, is we're becoming a country that talks, that just humors lawlessness. Our system humors lawlessness. Our system pretends that this is kind of an okay thing. Yeah, they're lawless, and they really shouldn't have done that. But hey, you know, that's what they're doing. And so you have lawlessness rampant in this country, including the border overrun, the judge lets them go, including this lawlessness in with squatters. And, you know, back to, I mentioned Charlie Kirk a minute ago, who I'm just so impressed by and grateful for. And Charlie Kirk's point about the left is attacking faith, family, and property. If you can't own your own home and expect the law will protect your ownership, will remove people instantly, you are losing your property. Much more falls under that category of property, but at least that does fall under it. I'm going to do a quick little aside on this show before I get to my next topic. So I am running for RNC Committeewoman for the great state of Texas. And I've done this show, America Can We Talk, for 10 years. I've done this show. The entire purpose of this show is to stand up and speak up for America. I have a campaign. It's RNC Committeewoman for Texas. There's a website you can go to, Debbie G for RNC. The talk show website is AmericaCanWeTalk.org. The RNC campaign website is DebbieG4RNC.com. I urge you to go there. Consider endorsing the show. I don't know if we're able to put that the logo up. You can, if you can, Emil. If you can't, it's okay. We have a great logo that we, I don't know if we can get up on the screen. Okay. I really, really want to share that with you and leave it up there for just a second. That is the logo for our campaign. And I want to urge you just to think a little bit. Wherever you live, you actually could endorse me. You don't have to be a resident of Texas. In fact, I have many, many really prominent endorsers. But I would love more if you listen to the show. You can endorse me and just say, I love how she defends America. I love how she speaks up for America. So you can go to DebbieG4RNC.com. Logo will be there, and our campaign. So you can come back to me. I just want to thank, number one, say a very special thank you to Charlie Kirk, who has endorsed my campaign. My campaign's been endorsed by prominent people around this country, serious thought leaders of all kinds, including Charlie Kirk, and including Turning Point USA Action, TPUSA Action, which is their 501c4. They've endorsed the campaign. They're helping the campaign. And I really appreciate that. The people who are in the fight to save America, all sorts of people across the country, people who understand China policy, border policy, COVID policy, all sorts of national leaders, deeply thoughtful thought leaders in this country, have endorsed my campaign. But I'd really love to have you, our listeners, endorse the campaign. Just go there and say, love Debbie's show. She always speaks truth about America. So do go again. It's DebbieG4RNC.com. Love to have your endorsement for that campaign. Okay, I'm still going to try to hit two more stories today. One is an amazing development on the Supreme Court. And at the Supreme Court. And this involves, I call this SCOTUS, which is Supreme Court of the United States, Arizona election machines case. Arizona officials failed to file an answer. And I'll very quickly explain what's happening here. So Carrie Lake, who I just think is an incredibly, incredibly wonderful, brave politician, she has a case now pending. She appealed to now the Supreme Court. She's got a decision against her at the district court and the federal level. That's the trial court, as well as the appellate court, which is, you know, in her case, the Ninth Circuit, I think, or is it the district court, appellate court? She's at the Supreme Court, and she's basically trying to make the point. The goal in her case is to say that Arizona should not be using these election machines, electronic voting machines, in elections because they're problematic, they're subject to being hacked, they're subject to being elections being stolen. And so her argument at the Supreme Court, what happened, by the way, is she raised these arguments at the district court and the appellate court, the two lower courts. And at those courts, she's making the argument that the machines are not reliable, that they're dangerous. And so you had, you know, so she's suing, she, Carrie Lake, and her team are suing the state of Arizona. Arizona officials at those lower courts argued, well, you know, we've certified them, they're fine, there's no reason to worry about the machines, you know, she's just, I mean, they're making the argument, she's sour grapes because she lost, fair and square, blah, blah. So she's making those arguments. Well, in this case, new evidence came to light between the time that the case was heard at the appellate court, at the circuit court, before it went to the Supreme Court. Usually you can't add new evidence before a case. When a case gets to the Supreme Court, you can't say, by the way, here's new evidence. But in this case, you can, because it was evidence that would have changed the outcome that was not known, could not have been known at the time of the litigation. So her case is now before the Supreme Court, and this is essentially challenging Arizona's use of electronic voting machines. And the three things that the arguments are being made are elections are supposed to be run on certified machines. And the defense of all the electronic voting machine companies is, they've all been certified. What are you talking about? They're certified. So the argument was they're certified. Well, the new evidence now is that the software, and to understand what I mean is, the software in the electronic voting machines has to be certified. They validate. It's federal law that says you have to do that. Well, the machines in Arizona didn't use the software that had been certified. They did get software, and they did get certified, but what they used in the 2022 election was not the certified software. And so this is, you know, it's pretty big. So they didn't really, seems to run afoul of federal law. You have to have certified software because that's not what they use. They ran the election in 2022 on uncertified software. That's point number one. Point number two, legislation requires that these you run tests on the machines. Before the election happens, you run tests on them. And so the running of tests obviously is one thing that the electronic machine manufacturers, defenders say, well, we ran tests, they were fine. What's she talking about? Except is now discovered they ran tests, but not on the machines they used. They ran tests on other machines, which they didn't use, which is kind of like, so it's completely circumventing the point of the law, obviously. And third point was the encryption keys, vital to the protection of the software, protection of the machines, the encryption keys were accessible, meaning they were not protected. They were accessible to hacking. I'm saying accessible, as in you could have access, I could have access, or someone really qualified, someone who knows how to be a cyber sleuth would know how to. So the encryption keys were accessible. So what is interesting and the big development is this case is before the Supreme Court, and basically it's a motion, it's an appeal, from the circuit court, the appellate court, to the Supreme Court, an appeal, and also a motion for an expedited hearing saying, once you see this case, Supreme Court, we want you to hurry up and do the hearing. Hurry up and get to a resolution before the fall elections. An expedited hearing means put it ahead of the other cases that would normally be in line. Hurry up and look at this case. So those two motions, the appeal and the motion for an expedited hearing, filed by Carrie Lake's people and the Arizona officials whose job it is to file their answer to oppose her motion for hearing, to whatever they would do about the expedited hearing, they just never filed anything. The Arizona officials did not meet the filing deadline, did not respond to the motion, to the appeal, or to the motion for an expedited hearing. One must ask why. Why wouldn't they do that? I mean, they've been defending the whole system all along, but now this evidence being presented to the Supreme Court, which was not presented at the, it wasn't available yet at the circuit court, this evidence sounds game-changing. And I did link on our show, I always link on my show everything I talk about. I put the links in so you can read them yourself. I put a link to Patrick Byrne and his presentation on locals. Patrick Byrne is a phenomenal, he's been on the show numerous times, he's a great guy, but anyway, he did a video on his locals channel laying out what I just said to you, only his is 47 minutes, a lot longer than this. But go listen to it yourself, listen to what he's saying, and the question, of course, is why wouldn't the Arizona officials, if they were sure the decision was right, and they're sure this new evidence was irrelevant, this new information presented to the Supreme Court was irrelevant, why wouldn't they file an answer? They didn't. They didn't answer the appeal, and they didn't respond to the motion for expedited hearing. So it's possible that this Arizona election thing is going to really, is going to really possibly be a game changer. The mission of this litigation is to try to have the machines not be used in the fall elections. And I'm going to tell you a quick point here, and still can get to my one last story, and then why it matters to you, but I was at a conference in Washington a couple of weeks ago, a very small, 100 people, very, very profound, about the fall elections. What are we going to do? You know, just a really profound, deeply thoughtful session. There are people there who are election experts and who are trying to work on election integrity. And even among these experts, there was the mentality of, look, we can't keep fighting about all the machines. We can't be talking about 2020. And I want to say, I think it takes amazing bravery on Carrie Lake's part, on Patrick Byrne's part, on the part of all the lawyers involved to continue pushing the question of whether or not the electronic machines are, you know, hackable, which we have seen that they are, whether they can be, they can facilitate, they're vulnerable to hacking, whether they can facilitate changing votes, whether they can facilitate the theft of an election. Because many people on the conservative side have kind of come back to saying, look, let's just move on. We'll get more voters this time. We're going to do this or that different, and somehow things will be different. And I'm telling you, folks, it's not okay that our side lets this go. I commend the bravery of Carrie Lake and others still arguing about election integrity and still pointing out, you know, we're not trying to go back and change the outcome of the 2020 election. No one is arguing that. But we are saying going forward, we have to be willing to say these things about electronic voting machines. And it does bring people mockery and derision and ridicule. If you Google anything about the issue of election integrity, every description of anyone trying to talk about election integrity is prefaced by or includes, oh, conspiracy theorists, right-wing conspiracy, election denier. They never answer questions like Carrie Lake has raised at the Supreme Court. They never answer questions by like the evidence presented by Dr. Douglas Frank countless times all over this country. They don't answer the information presented by Seth Keschel and many others. They've just tried to, as the left does on everything else, they try to resolve the issue of election integrity using mockery, derision, and ridicule, and they silence people because people don't want to be the victims of their mockery and derision and ridicule, so they just shut up. We cannot shut up about this. We need to be pushing long-term in this country to get to an election system that actually is reliable. We can count on it and use it. I don't know what can happen in this election cycle in 2024, but long-term in this country, the exposure of the capacity of electronic election machines to actually not only possibly be hacked, but be part of an ongoing, a systemic effort to steal the election from the American people and put it in the hands of people, whoever is engaged in all of that election theft. So I will keep you appraised on what Patrick Byrne has to say, what the Supreme Court will say, but right now it's before the Supreme Court with apparently very consequential new evidence. Okay, I want to, in about 3 minutes, tell you the last story. It's kind of a fun story, and I think it actually should bring a smile to your face. I called it Young Black Voters for Trump, but two things have happened recently that go to a theme I'm going to tell you in a moment. But the two things that happened recently were, one, there is a report that was actually in the Washington Post, probably killed them to have to print it. But Washington Post brought a story about a Democrat data scientist named Aaron Strauss. Aaron Strauss. He helps Democrats come up with election data, and he is part of the, he works for this firm called Open Labs, and they're basically doing everything they can to try to register young voters because they think those voters will vote with the left. But the most amazing thing happened. This Aaron Strauss put out a memo, which the Washington Post printed and talked about, which is basically, it was meant to be a confidential memo. I don't know who leaked it, but I'm glad they did. Basically, circulated a memo among top Democrat donors, essentially saying that they need to narrow, to stop pushing for young voters. And the language, this guy's memo, Aaron Strauss wrote to these top donors about stop pushing for young voters. For decades, nonpartisan groups allied with the Democrat Party have run wide-ranging efforts aimed at increasing voter registration among people of color and young people, groups that tend to lean Democratic, but have historically voted at lower rates than older white people. So they've had this mission, go for young voters, go for people of color, and that'll up the Democrat numbers. What this guy is saying, though, is in recent years, this is Aaron Strauss speaking. In recent years, there's been a marked shift among the roughly 1 in 5 citizens of voting age who are unregistered, so unregistered people, a dramatic shift toward Republicans. raising fresh questions about how much boosting nonpartisan voter registration could actually help Donald Trump and his nomination. Recent polls, for example, show that I'm jumping ahead. There's so much data in this story. Again, it's available on our website. So much data in this story. When they poll groups after the 2020 election, talking about Black and Latino voters, at the time, right after 2020, there was a poll that showed 60% of Black voters supported Biden. That number, it's backwards. 2020, the polling after the election, 2020, said 87% of Black voters supported Biden. 2020, 87% supported Biden. Recent Quinnipiac poll, that is a lot of polling, it's down to 60%, down from 87 to 60% polling in favor of Biden in the 4 years since, or three plus years he's been in. Same thing with Latino vote. Previously, it was at 65% of Latino voters in 2020, so they supported Biden. It's down to 34%. And similarly, and entertainingly, James Carville, that snake-like figure of a Democrat Party activist and strategist, and you all know who James Carville is, and I linked to this story as well. By the way, on our website, it's AmericaCanWeTalk.org. And at the homepage under shows, drop down list of links. You can read these links yourself. But there was a great story. James Carville, who is a Democrat, you know, strategist, extraordinary, nasty, nasty guy, in my personal opinion. He may be nice to his wife. I don't know. But he's nasty in politics. He issued a warning to the Democrats. Young men of color are leaving the party in droves. And he's saying, we're not shedding some voters, they're leaving the party in droves. I've been very vocal about this, Carville said on his podcast. It's horrifying. Our numbers among young voters, especially younger Blacks, younger Latinos, younger people of color, particularly males, are leaving the Democrat Party. And I'm going to close before I get on this point, and there's more that he said. But this is one of my urging to every Republican candidate, and one of the things I try to talk about in my race for RNC committee woman and all my speaking politically, and that is this. The truth actually appeals to almost everyone. Now, there are radical Marxist, socialist, communists in this world who just delusionally believe somehow if they could have a world governed by the World Economic Forum or by the United Nations or the communists that could run the world, everything would be fair and reasonable and wonderful, and life would be happy, and you know, and nothing bad would ever happen again. These people are delusional. Communism always fails. Socialism causes misery, and everything the World Economic Forum is doing is all about taking away your freedom. So back to what James Carville is observing. People, young people, are leaving the party, leaving the Democrat Party. Black voters, Latino voters, young voters are leaving the Democrats because America has just gotten a treat. In fact, the world has gotten kind of a free sample of looking at what happens when you put lunatic leftist ideas in power in this country. They're watching the Biden administration, destruction of everything good about America, this celebration of transgenderism and pushing it on kindergartners, and abandoning the border and causing the death of millions of Americans from fentanyl and drug smuggling and the misery caused by sex trafficking and child sex trafficking. The Biden administration is openly encouraging, not just encouraging, they are enabling, they're in fact inviting this invasion at the southern border. Everything the Biden administration is doing is exactly what you would do if you're engaged in a Marxist, socialist, communist takedown of this country. We're watching a takedown of America by the left right in front of our very eyes. And this explains why so many young voters, no matter what your skin color, race, age, ethnicity, national origin, you watch this, and people in America are saying, we don't want this. We don't want what the left is doing. We want America back. We want Texas back. We want our state back. We want our freedom back. We don't want to have the government monitoring everything we do. We don't like repression of freedom of speech. We don't like a politicized government. We don't like government shutting down its political opponents, using the administration's powers. People do not like what the Biden administration is doing. this fall's election will be a barn burner win for Donald Trump and for the Republicans. And the braver they are, the more firmly they speak up, the stronger will be the outcome. This polling that they're alluding to in Quinnipiac and what James Carville is saying, it's just the tip of the iceberg. America does not want what the Biden administration is doing, and is incumbent on candidates, elected officials, to speak up and say so, to point out why conservatives, why Republicans, why patriots are better, are offering better solutions, better ideas, and better policies, and why, and to speak boldly about how evil and wrong everything the Biden administration is doing is. We will win when we speak boldly. And people, and no matter your race, ethnicity, national origin, skin color, the ideas of America, of our Declaration, of our founding, of the Constitution, the ideas of America are the timeless right ideas that have made America great. They can bring America back this time, this fall, if we just simply embrace those ideas, speak up for them, stop negotiating anything with the left, speak up for America. Okay, so I close this show every day by telling you why the stories we talked about today matter to you. So we start our show today talking about the Easter at the White House, banning religious symbols and celebrating transgenderism. Number one, presidential proclamation of Transgender Visibility Day on March 31st. And number two, White House PR emphasizing no religious imagery on Easter eggs were deliberately timed to mock Christianity and Easter in America. The left is trying to deflect the backlash by positioning both as consistent with past practice. Nobody is buying the leftist spin because, among other reasons, the Biden cabal has been anti-Christian from the beginning of the White House, even with their staffing choices. Legacy media is trying to dismiss Biden administration's Easter mockery as inconsequential. Legacy media is dead wrong. This was a public slap in the face to American Christians. They won't forget it. And we talked about lawless America storming border fences plus squatting is stealing and why it matters to you. El Paso Democrat judge released the migrant gang that stormed the border and U.S. law enforcement. Leftist states and cities are accommodating squatters' rights claims to private homes. These abuses are over the top, pure lawlessness that's beyond sane rationalization. Florida Governor DeSantis deserves credit for stepping up to protect Floridians' property. Historical line of attack by communists versus America has always focused on destroy faith, family, and private property. Easter mockery, transgenderism, and squatters' rights are targeted weapons in this attack. Do enough Americans see it clearly enough to stop it? And yes is the answer. And SCOTUS Supreme Court Arizona election machines case, Arizona fails to file an answer. Keep an eye on Carrie Lake's pending appeal to the Supreme Court. Relevant to 2020 and 2022 elections, SCOTUS now has hard evidence in front of it. Voting machines required to use certified software that demonstrably did not. Voting machines were required to be subjected to logic testing before the use. Tests were faked. Encryption keys embedded in publicly accessible software. Utterly unsecure and hackable, and Arizona officials did not file opposition to the Supreme Court appeal. Very, very unusual. Did new evidence submitted on the appeal catch them without an explanation? This appeal puts unopposed, overwhelming evidence of election fraud in 2020 and 2022 right in front of the Supreme Court. With sufficient moral courage and integrity, they will have to hear the case. And finally, young black voters for Trump. Democrat voter registration drives running into problems. Democrat voter registration drives are running into problems. James Carville is worried. Traditional sources of new Democrat voters, young blacks and young Americans and people others of color, intend to vote for Trump. None of this should be surprising to the Republican Party. America's founding ideals, when rightly and consistently articulated, appeal to everyone, and rampant leftist lawlessness appeals to no one. Trump is headed toward a too-big-to-rig landslide. Deep state opposition and desperation is dangerous. That, my very fine friends, is America Can We Talk for today. Thank you so very much for tuning in to America Can We Talk. Check out AmericaCanWeTalk.org and check out Debbie G, the digit 4, DebbieG for RNC.com. Love to have your endorsement of my campaign for RNC. I thank you for tuning in to America Can We Talk today and every show. I do this show, America Can We Talk, to speak truth about America because America matters. And I will talk to you next time.
Can We Talk? Truth about America.
Can you hear?